And welcome back to Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. I have sad news for our friends of the Taylor Report, and that Stanley Babbitt, a dear friend and supporter of our program and of the station for many years, has passed away. As I mentioned on the program last week, I hope for his ears for him to know how much we appreciated him. He was a hospital worker and also a garment worker. And during World War II, he had been a merchant seaman. Mentioned it on the show that he had crossed the Atlantic in convoys in a ship that was very vulnerable because they were carrying fuel for fighter planes to England or the UK. I never know whether I'm supposed to say Britain, UK, England, whatever. And he had a wonderful quality. He was a very giving and caring person. And I mentioned on the show last week that I went to see him in hospital. And he opened his eyes and saw that I was there. And he asked me, what's going on in Yemen? Which is, he wanted to know how the progress of the war was with, and happens to be a burning question in the world. And Stan wasn't going to miss out. He wanted to be part of every struggle. He wanted to be on the right side. He wanted to see wars eliminated. He wanted to see exploitation eliminated. He was very much a follower and supporter of the Cuban Revolution. I guess you could say Stan was a Fidelista. And as we listeners know, there's an embargo that is just nothing but a low-down blood feud by the American leaders, the most prosperous people, the 1%, to punish Cuba for having the gall to stand up for themselves and to say, we're not going to accept dictation. We are going to be respected, and you'll have to live with that. And the U.S. Makes it a point. They have to make examples of countries that get out of line. And Cuba has remained out of line and contrary to the US, even though, by the way, we want to remind everybody, Cuba under Fidel in the early stages made all the kinds of effort it's supposed to make to, if you want to make peace with someone, we want to get along. Fidel was a highly persuasive individual, and he thought that he could explain the position of Cuba to America's leaders, but like other revolutionary leaders before him who had changed the terms of for their own economy and given more power to the people, the Americans were not enthusiastic. And so Cuba has had to take the brunt of U.S. demonstration of power used through the embargo and through sanctions, all of which are illegal, and the United Nations has called on them to stop. There's been votes at the UN, nearly unanimous, saying that, you know, this is not appropriate. We've been gone through so many years of the American embargo that it's unfortunate people kind of develop a callus. And so the injustice is there and it's noted, but it's habit because they do not really believe the American will change its ways. But Stan Babbitt was one of the people who said, well, Cuba won't change its ways either. And all of South America actually admires Cuba. Whenever you have a newly elected, truly popular democratic government in South America, the first thing they do is invite Cuban leaders to come visit. This has happened across the board in Mexico and Argentina, Peru. We're seeing a new winds blowing. And Stan Babbitt believed in Cuba, and his personal defiance of the embargo was when he was able to do it in his years of retirement, he would go once a year and he would take all the medical, anything he thought could help, and deliver them. And it's something he looked forward to and did with enthusiasm. The Cubans appreciated him for that. It was because it was just a great humanitarian gesture. And so we've lost one fighter, but one assumes that his character and his example has already inspired many others. I've had many calls, and I've talked to people who really appreciated Stan Babbitt. And because we all agree, he's an example. And so he's made other people, he lifted them up. And that's a something to cherish for all of us, to know about our good friend Stan. Since he did ask what's going on with Yemen, I think the rest of the Taylor Report we're going to take up here with some of the kinds of things that we would have been talking about. I said last week we called him the Politburo because he liked to take up all the topics that might help humanity. And he, on the matter of Yemen, we have news in that Saudi Arabia is losing, actually. It's Saudi Arabia's war. They decided to do it. The people of Yemen had made a choice of political leadership. This did not please Saudis. And the Saudis, being a junior partner of Western imperialism, assumed they would have their way by bombing. And they really crossed the line. I think it's been remarkable. In Yemen, the Saudis rarely fight on their own. They usually hire someone. When they started this punishment of Yemen for choosing its own road, they, of course, share a border. They did hire other countries. It was clear that they had bribed three or four countries, and more than three or four, to send soldiers. But this war has gone on, and it is a people's war. And we use that term lightly, but a people's war is very different than other wars. And the Yemenis have proven themselves very capable. And in the past months, the tide has been turning in that war. And listeners will know that there is the missiles fired by the Yemenis have landed and on targets and well-directed fire within Saudi Arabia, which is really quite remarkable. I'm quite surprised. We've come to a time when Saudi Arabia, who always just spent money and went to Riviera and all that and hung out with presidents, bought presidents, bought congressmen, bought senators, bought parliamentarians, et cetera. But now they got their hands dirty, and now they're getting a nosebleed. They're being struck. And this is quite a new situation. And we should all celebrate this news. And of course, the way Joe Biden, the president of the United States, is, his way of treating this development is to begin to provide weaponry to the Saudis when he said he would not. He uses, of course, weasel words. He says, well, this is for defense. But that's very peculiar because this is a war of aggression by Saudi Arabia. So when you say you're providing them with weapons to defend themselves, what you're saying is am supporting an aggressor. You call it defense, but your friend who decided to attack the Yemenis is getting beaten up in a fight. So now you come, why? Because the U.S. does not want to lose. Saudi Arabia. So when Biden told the electorate, oh, you know, we're fed up with them, they murdered this guy, Khashoggi, and they have been in many ways brutal, et cetera. And so we're not going to provide them with weapons. Well, of course, so he is now deciding to do it. He won't get any argument from the U.S. Congress. They're all, they've all bought in and been bought. But it's very important to underline it, that to understand what this is about. Joe Biden is coming to the rescue of the Saudis and their royal family. Country is named after the family. And we hear about democratic values, and our values are superior to other people's values. But they do not want to lose the Saudis. And they may actually lose them. They've falsified the report of the war by saying that it's that they'd like to use this, the villain. They bring in the villain. They say the Houthis of Yemen are Iran-backed. There's no evidence of that, other than that the Iranians do support the right of the Yemenis to defeat the Saudis. But they're not in any position. There's no Navy, there's no Air Force, and no heavy material being provided. But the Americans want to turn this into, you see, we're answering Iran. It has nothing to do with Iran. It has everything to do with the right of the Yemeni people to self-determination, and the need of the people in the region to get rid of this Saudi empire that meddles in everybody's affairs. By the way, including the Americans, when the Americans were looking around for Russians to see if any Russians were involved in their elections, Saudis are involved deeply in American elections, and they own all kinds of so-called think tanks where they have money. So they've hired 9 or 10 intellectuals. Intellectuals are among the most corrupt people on earth. And most of them talk real well, but they're hoping to get paid. And the Saudis pay very well. So there's think tanks all over America that they sponsor. And nobody says, hey, that should be stopped. I thought we were against people meddling. No, we only want to talk about Russians. So this, again, it's a story to follow, and it is in the headlines, and I don't see Canada doing anything more on this. There's also this matter of what's going on in Sudan, and the headline that the story that should concern us is the one that says that Mr. Blinken, Secretary of State of the U.S., has been meeting and talking to the army of Sudan, and the issue here for us, for Canadians, and Americans, it should be concerned, is why is it that Sudan has, which has a thousands of year history as a people, they took the course of opposing colonialism and becoming an independent state, and they are still struggling mainly with one another over how the country ought to be led. Why is it that the Secretary of State of the U.S. is the person that we all have to make sure that the leaders meet with him, and then he gives advice, and he does this, and he does that? To my mind, it is, we're getting ahead of ourselves if people say, we have to restore the democracy. It didn't appear to be much of a democracy, and some strange things were going on in Sudan. They agreed that as soon as they eliminated their last leader, who I think it was Bashir, I believe, once he was out, the Americans came in, and it was, again, it was Americans then who, and began to talk about, okay, now we we're going to approve of the new Sudan and you have to have a democracy and all that. But while they're talking about that, Sudan, a Muslim country, says they're going to become part of the Abraham Accords, the Donald Trump deal of the century game. I'm sure that alarm bells rang all across Sudan, because what is that about? If your main thing is you want to restore democracy and all that, why are you suddenly talking about the Abraham Accords, which are was a concoction put together by some the worst elements of the Trump administration? And I know that Trump is probably the worst of the worst, but there were some pretty nasty characters there. They dreamed this up. It is a non-starter. So when there's a coup and the generals say, we don't like the way these guys were, we don't think they were actually democratic and there's games being played. Well, they probably are. Why don't we just wait? Why would anybody say the army shouldn't have taken power? I don't know. I wasn't there. They have tensions in that country that need to be addressed internally. Anybody who's looked at Sudan knows that. And so this knee-jerk thing of, oh yes, put whoever the parliamentarians, you call them, were in back. I wouldn't be too enthused about it. You say, without any referendum, without any, they took a dramatic step of saying they're gonna sign on with the Abraham Accords, and also that they were working on recognition with Israel, which is a very sensitive issue amongst Muslims and the people of that region. It looked to me more like an inside job of some kind, and I have to be blunt about it. I don't see why everybody's an authority on how democracy functions. We're very quick, and certainly Canadian global affairs people, I used to call them foreign affairs, I understand you're supposed to say global, I guess. They preen themselves on, we know everything about democracy. I read a quote, a very useful one, by Chinese foreign minister, and he said, you know, we'd like you to get down off your high horse. You do not have a patent, you Western imperialist powers. You don't have a patent on democracy. There are many movements and revolutions and political forces in the world call themselves democratic, and they are as legitimate as you are. So that little sneaky game of saying, oh, we're the ones who know. And not only are they the ones who say they know what democracy is as opposed to anybody else in the world, but they also say, we know which guy in your country is a Democrat. We're going to help him because we're the authorities. All that is neocolonialism, neo-imperialism, if you want to use the word, and it's racist. It is reigniting the colonial project. When they say, well, we have to interfere with China because we hear there's something about the Uyghurs, or we've decided there's something about Hong Kong. These are not matters that have anything to do with them. No one has appointed the United States or Canada or Britain to go around the world encircling people with warships and missiles and saying, we're democratic and you're not, and we're going to be rough with you until you change. And the world is not going to accept that. When this hate program, for example, towards China is ignited in Canada, where the Globe and the Star and the CBC compete with each other to smear China, what they're not acknowledging, and everyone should know, is that the rest of the world does not agree. The countries of Africa do not agree with Canada about it being a democratic, on a democratic mission. If they say, for example, now they're using the new term which the Pentagon started to advance, Indo Pacific, Indo, because they want to make it India. And they're telling us we're going to ally with India against China. And why? Well, because they say we have found that there's the Chinese have a bad policy in the autonomous region, Uyghur autonomous region, Xinjiang. Well, now that you've mentioned India, what about Kashmir? Kashmir was supposed to have a referendum, according to the United Nations, and determine its own fate. The government of India says absolutely not, no way, never. And they have an army, a huge piece of the Indian army in Kashmir to hold on to it. They guarantee that there won't be any referendum, that none of the agreements which were agreed to by international body as India was coming into being and Pakistan was coming into being. They said Kashmir has to be solved in the following manner. But India violated that. India has its army in Kashmir. I don't hear anybody saying, oh, you know, we really ought not to be so nice to India. Maybe we should be rough with India. Maybe we should get tough. I don't hear that. Why? Because they have a dirty alliance in their mind that they think they can work. It's just a bunch of thieves, a bunch of bandits who think they're going to find a way to push India into a war with China so that maximum number of Indians would die on our behalf. And that's what it is. It isn't anything to do with democracy. When they say they are concerned about Xinjiang, it's impossible that they care about Xinjiang because they don't care about Kashmir. This is patent. But instead, we don't get that. Instead, we get the democratic countries really have to get together. You know, we have to unite. Well, I suppose by that you mean you're going to lie about who is a democratic country. Countries that oppress other countries are not democratic. And by the way, internally in the United States, they wiped out nations, the indigenous people. There are survivors. And they went through a century and more of slavery, and then they extended the new form of it in terms of racism. These are matters they have not corrected. The prisons of America are disproportionately full of Black people, brown people, and indigenous people. Same with Canada, for all the talk. So we raise all this because there is no pushback. There's no political pushback in Canada against this trend. The trend is set and menacing, and we do not have a member of parliament who is even asking these questions. Instead, it is a storm, an opera, a roar has gone up of hostility to China, and it is extremely dangerous. And we have to say that we got the shoe on the wrong foot. It is the West that is aggressive. It is the West were the colonialists, and they have dreams of being neo-colonialists. So this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. We're sorry to say the stand is gone, and we'll be with you next week.